You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
The yeas are 205, the nays are 228. The motion is not adopted.
That's the sound yesterday in the House of Representatives when they knew that the bailout plan from the administration had bombed out. The bailout plan did not pass, and the ripple effects were felt immediately on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 777 points, and that mark of the beast was more than matched by the decline in the S&P 500, 9% decline, nearly 9% decline. So with so much sentiment on Wall Street for this bailout and so much political sentiment in America against it, we couldn't be more fortunate than to have with us Chris Shays, Republican representative from Connecticut, who voted with the yeas, the 205 yeas, even though he was in the minority of his fellow Republicans. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Chris Shays, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to be with you.
So this is not the first time you've been in a situation where you've supported the administration against your constituents. We could talk about foreign policy issues in the past, the Iraq War. It's made it very difficult for you politically. You did it again. How worried are you this morning?
Well, I'm just concerned that we're not playing Russian roulette. I mean, we have an economy. This isn't 1929, but it has the feeling of 1929. And, you know, it's just a bit reckless, it seems to me. But I know members who are voting their conscience. This is what you call a legacy vote. This is the vote you have to carry with you the rest of your life. And you want to make sure it's the right vote and one that you can look back on and say, I did the right thing.
But Congressman, is it really about conscience, or is it consciousness, or is it a reflection also of what some of your constituents have been saying?
Well, I mean, my calls were 30-1 against but there were some districts that were 500-1. I mean, it's there is this feeling among some of my constituents and others that they would rather wait on bread lines than to see these financial tycoons, as they would describe them, not have to pay a penalty.
Well, do you believe they'll get their chance if Congress doesn't act? Will we actually go into something like a depression?
Well, who knows? I mean, I don't think we would go into a depression, but it would might be a very deep recession. But the bottom line is, this is something that we need to deal with, and we can do it. I did not think the bill was perfect. Obviously, no bill will be perfect. I had reservations. I didn't think, and I don't think $700 billion is enough. Having said that, I think we will ultimately get back all of that $700 billion and more in terms of selling these assets later, and in terms of the equity interest we get with the companies that have this protection. But there was the other side. I mean, there were members who were concerned, as I was, about why we weren't addressing the deposits in banks, insuring only up to $100,000 for depositors. That goes back to 1980, and you have businesses that can't do business without more than $100,000 in an account. And then there's also the issue of the capital adequacy. There's the view that if we focused on improving the capital adequacy of these banks, you would see the problem resolved.
Now, let's explain what that is. You're talking about relaxing credit requirements so that they don't have to post questionable securities on their balance sheet each quarter?
Well, that's called the mark to market, and there is the feeling that we are forcing companies to almost put their assets at fire sale prices. And, you know, as the bank has to contract, it's calling in its loans and just further exasperating the problem. So, I mean, there could be some good that comes out of this. I think we will pass the bill either on Thursday or Friday. But wouldn't it be helpful, for instance, if the SEC dealt with this mark-to-market issue so that we didn't have to, force companies to bring down their assets?
Congressman, how do you respond to the notion that what's lacking here is communication from the White House or from Republicans or Democrats who support this bailout to communicate the real need to their voters?
Well,
there's a missing link that's enormous.
Well, there is a missing link, but, I mean, you are just part of that problem, and no disrespect, you call it a bailout. And it is not a bailout. A bailout implies that somehow we're giving something for nothing, and that people who you know, don't deserve it are getting a benefit. What we're trying to do, so I agree that we need to communicate it, but do it better. This isn't about Wall Street. It's about Main Street. It's about people who have college savings seeing it disappear. It's about people with 401ks. It's about retirement funds. It's about businesses being able to get the dollars they need to fill the stocks in their the shelves in their store.
Understood, Congressman. But let me just take the position of your constituents, who I'm not going to take the rap for misleading. They're 30-1 against this bill for some good reasons. One of them could possibly be the fact that nothing in this bill forces banks to make those loans, to hire those people, to do those kinds of things that are going to protect those investments on Main Street. You can put all the money in the world into buying toxic securities, but if banks don't lend, and nothing the Fed has done up to this point has unfrozen the credit markets, if banks don't lend, we're in the same position we are with or without this bill.
Well, the answer that I would give you is that what we have now is we just don't have money moving from one place to another. It's like a big machine that's coming to a grinding halt. Companies need to make money. They're in the business of making money. If they stay static, they go out of business. So it's not logical to me that banks would not extend loans if they had money to loan.
But it's not logical that banks would give loans to people who can't pay them back. That's not logical either.
Well, and so why would we force them to?
But they did it on their own. Shouldn't they pay the penalty for that?
No, with all due respect, I mean, that's partly an argument I can't disagree with, but there's another part to the story. We were sending messages that banks should loan to people who had incredibly bad credit. We had the Federal Reserve of New England basically say that income would no longer be a factor in evaluating whether or not they should extend loans. I mean, so there was some craziness out there, and we all obviously had a role. We didn't have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac under the 1933 and 34 Act.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they basically securitized half of the $12 trillion that was out there.
Congressman, yeah. I think that there'd be overall agreement that there is lots and lots of problems,
right,
from, you know, the borrower all the way up to the CEOs and to, you know, legislators and politicians. But let me ask you this.
Sure.
What do you think needs to happen now?
Well, first off, not to panic, because there's no reason to panic. The Senate wasn't going to vote on this bill until tomorrow anyway. I think I'm down in Washington. I think that's where we should be. We need 15 votes. It may be that some members will reconsider their vote. But there's also the possibility, and I think this is if the SEC dealt with its mark-to-market rule, just their changing that would bring in, you know, 50 votes. So they could do something. The administration could do something.
So you really think that some of these obstacles are just that simple?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is a marginal call, and I do think, while they might not admit it, one or two members who voted no are a little concerned that they've caused, in part, the loss of $1 trillion.
Well, where does the panic come from, though? I mean, we've had the acquisition of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac by the federal government, essentially, the acquisition of AIG, essentially, by the federal government. We've had the largest bank failure in U.S. history with Washington Mutual, and now Wachovia, just averted failure by being acquired by Citigroup. I mean, every time the Feds step in at this point, the panic continues to persist. Even Henry Paulson said we're closer to the beginning than the ending in the housing correction.
Well,
why do you think this stops it?
Well, I don't think it stops it. I think it puts us in a path that heads us in a different direction. I mean, I acknowledge to you I voted for a bill that I have three major questions with. So, you know, I think there are other things that clearly have to happen. But it's the first point is we can put this bill back together again without a lot of difficulty, I believe. So that's the first issue. And then the next issue is what are the other things that follow? We had too many businesses, you know, gambling with their shareholders' money. They simply had too high margin rates. We know that. And the fear is there because we realize there's not enough capital to back up what needs to be backed up.
Well, Congressman Shays, the fear is there both on Capitol Hill and on Wall Street. You've got a day to think about it, and you'll get back to work on Thursday.
Well,
Congressman
Shays,
thanks for joining
today.
Us. Thanks. You're working today, exactly. We reached him in his office at Washington, D.C. Representative Christopher Shays, Republican of Connecticut, who voted, we should say, for the bailout yesterday.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.